This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Layla Munin, your host. I am the nutritionist who works along with Dr. Ronald Hoffman at our busy practice in Manhattan. If you'd like to make an appointment, call this number during business hours, 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. If you'd like to receive our newsletter, you can sign up. It's free. Simply go to drhoffman.com and you can sign up for the newsletter. It comes out weekly and you can unsubscribe at any time. Do you have any questions for me? Do you have any topics of interest? You can email me to radioprogram@aol.com. That's radioprogram@aol.com. So, I've got a question here from Donna. Donna writes, in an effort to remove dairy from my diet, I'm trying to find protein substitutes. What do you think of smoothies made with almond milk, berries, and an organic vegetable protein powder? This is a great question. Lots of people remove dairy from their diet, whether they are allergic, whether they have lactose intolerance. In the setting of cancer, it may be a good idea to remove dairy because of the insulin-like growth factor, IGF-1, and other reasons to avoid dairy. If you have chronic nasal congestion, sinusitis, phlegm in your throat that just won't quit, get rid of the dairy. Get rid of it immediately. Other reasons to give up dairy? Do you have an autoimmune condition like psoriasis, like lupus, like multiple sclerosis, Hashimoto's, thyroiditis, Graves' disease, Sjogren's? All benefit with the elimination of dairy because we know from the scientific research that casein, the protein found in all animal milk, casein is problematic in autoimmunity. So Donna is trying to find some other sources of protein since she's removing dairy from her diet. Well, I'm assuming that Donna may be a vegetarian if this was the only source of protein in her diet. Certainly other sources of protein are animal protein. Like meat, like eggs, like fish. But if you're not having those, for whatever personal reasons, you may not be having those. Other sources of protein. Now, vegetable protein powders, some of them do fall short because they're not complete proteins the way animal protein is and even the way that dairy protein is because it comes from an animal source. Often, vegetarians and vegans rely on soy protein. I'm not a huge fan of soy protein. It is largely GMO, specifically in America. And soy has a lot of phytoestrogens. Well, you may be listening to me say, but phytoestrogens are supposed to be good for us. There are two schools of thought. And the jury is still out And once a definitive conclusion is made, I promise as soon as I find out about it, I will be the first to tell you whether in favor of phytoestrogens or not. Phytoestrogens occur in other foods too, like flax and other vegetables, but soy is a huge source of phytoestrogens. And let me explain the controversy about phytoestrogens in soy. Some claim that the phytoestrogens in soy are weaker. And when we consume soy, those weaker phytoestrogens take up residence in the receptors, our estrogen receptors in our body, thereby inhibiting our own more powerful endogenous estrogen to be at work, right? So by putting a weaker estrogen in its place, it's beneficial, thereby preventing or lowering risk of too much estrogen in the body, estrogen dominance, or estrogen-related cancers like breast cancer, for example. The other school of thought on phytoestrogens is, in addition to our endogenous estrogen, the estrogen that our bodies naturally produce, these phytoestrogens from dietary sources like soy are basically adding to the burden of estrogen in our bodies, creating too much estrogen in the body. And I think a very good example of this may be, it's not a perfect example, I've heard many women firsthand, I've heard from them, these are patients and clients, I've heard them say, I did not have to take any hormone replacement therapy after menopause because I took care of my hot flashes by drinking a glass of soy milk every day. So though the estrogen in that glass of soy milk helped to reduce hot flashes in these women, I found that very interesting and yet a little bit disturbing. Is that glass of soy milk unregulated hormone replacement therapy? Wow, that's a powerful glass of soy milk, I said to myself. So until this controversy about soy, the phytoestrogens in soy, are they beneficial? Are they harmful? Until there is something conclusive, I'm always going to give you both sides of the story and what I think. And while it is still up in the air that it may be harmful, I would like to advise more conservatively and be more cautious and say best to avoid. So coming back to this question for Donna about protein substitutes, soy being a complete protein, but because of the phytoestrogens, may be questionable for its health benefit or possible danger. Pea protein, rice protein, these are typically used in protein powders, vegetarian sources of protein powder. They're fine, but they're not complete sources of protein. So if you're vegan, vegetarian, we want to get you more complete sources of protein. In comes hemp protein. Guess what? Hemp is a good source of complete protein. It's pretty good. So Donna, I would advise you look for some hemp protein. It's gotten more and more popular. So check out hemp protein. And yes, you can make a smoothie made with almond milk, berries. You can also use simply water to mix with your protein powder and add some fruit, maybe add some ice, something like that. You could add frozen berries, which may give it a more creamy texture. That could be fun. Donna, thank you for your question, and thank you for emailing me. Moving on, good news about L-glutamine. More effective treatments are needed for patients with post-infectious diarrhea predominant IBS, that is diarrhea predominant irritable bowel syndrome. So, a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled, 8-week-long trial was done to assess the efficacy and safety of oral glutamine therapy in patients who developed IBS-D, meaning irritable bowel syndrome, diarrhea predominant, with increased intestinal permeability following an infection, a GI infection, an enteric infection. So these were the methods. Eligible adults were randomized to taking 5 grams of glutamine 3 times a day or a placebo for 8 weeks. That's a nice high dose of glutamine, 5 grams TID, that's 3 times a day, or a placebo, meaning a sugar pill, if you will, for 8 weeks. The placebo is no glutamine. The primary endpoint of this trial was a reduction of equal to or greater than 50 points on the irritable bowel syndrome severity scoring system, meaning how severe is your irritable bowel syndrome. Secondary endpoints included the IBS severity scoring scores, changes in daily bowel movement frequency, stool formation. Have you heard of the Bristol Stool Scale? It's something I actually refer to in my office. The quality of stool, whether it's constipation, whether it's coming out in coals or broken up, or if it's a fully formed stool, something resembling a banana or a snake, if you will, something like that, or something more watery like diarrhea, very soft stool, not a fully formed stool, and going all the way to liquid diarrhea, which would be the score of 5 there. So they scored it based on changes in daily bowel movement frequency, the stool form using the Bristol stool scale, and intestinal permeability. What were the results? 54 glutamine and 52 placebo subjects completed the 8-week study. The primary endpoint occurred in 43 in the glutamine group and 3 in the placebo group. So the primary endpoint occurred in 43, which is almost 80% of the glutamine group, and 5.8% of the placebo group, which is like a 14-fold difference. Glutamine also reduced all secondary endpoint means. The IBS severity score at 8 weeks, 301 versus 181. Daily bowel movement frequency was 5.4 versus 2.9. Bristol stool scale, 6.5 versus 3.9. This is all good news for glutamine. And intestinal permeability, 0.11 versus 0.05. Intestinal hyperpermeability was normalized in the glutamine group, but not the control group. Adverse events and rates of study drug discontinuation were low and similar in both groups. No serious adverse events were observed. So in patients with IBS, predominantly diarrhea with intestinal hyperpermeability following an enteric infection, oral dietary glutamine supplements dramatically and safely reduced all major IBS-related endpoints. Large randomized clinical trials should now be done to validate these findings, assess quality of life benefits, and explore pharmacological mechanisms. This is all good news for glutamine. We've known that glutamine is very beneficial. There is a minority of people, however, I want to say, that have adverse effects, some adverse effects to L-glutamine, if they're MSG sensitive, monosodium glutamate sensitive. The L-glutamine itself tends to hit their MSG circuit or receptors, if you will. But overall, glutamine is very beneficial. It's the required form of feeding by the GI tract, after all. I want to move on here and bring up an article that I read recently in Medscape, Separating the Wheat from the Chaff. 5 evidence-based dietary tips to share with your patients. And this is given by a spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. This is an organization that I belong to. Do I agree with everything they say and they do? No. Why am I a member? Because it gives me access to certain benefits and things. So that's the reason I'm a member. So we all know, as practitioners, that counseling patients on healthy dietary patterns can be challenging. But initial diet advice should focus on encouraging patients to add missing components from their diets, most commonly fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and dairy, rather than restriction. Now, you have to know that this organization, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, follows their own guideline, which is the MyPlate guideline, which is the government-issued standard guideline of your vegetables, your fruits, absolutely, your protein sources, your whole grains, and your low-fat dairy. And this is the standard issue. So they go on to say that when people are resistant to change, they don't want to give up their favorite foods. We all know this as practitioners. It's one of the obstacles for significant diet changes, whether it's for a therapeutic diet or simply eating better than they were. So the 5 evidence-based dietary tips, number one is get the right nutrients. Patients should aim to fulfill their recommended intake with a variety of nutrient-dense foods that span all the food groups, or as many of the food groups as possible. I would make that modification to boost long-term health. Absolutely. And healthy eating styles may vary from individual to individual, and frequently reflect cultural and personal preferences. So, in a 2017 study, nearly one half of all cardiometabolic deaths, deaths from heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, among adults in the U.S., were found to be associated with suboptimal intakes of vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, and omega-3 fatty acids. Absolutely. So the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, replaced its food pyramid of yore with MyPlate in 2011, as I just described to you. MyPlate illustrates the concepts of balance and portion size that are evident at a glance. The plate is divided into 4 roughly equal parts of fruits, vegetables, grains, and proteins. As a simple reminder of how to eat healthier, lying beside the plate is the 5th food group, which is dairy, positioned as a glass of milk. Dairy can be a glass of milk, cheese, or yogurt, or can be substituted with a fortified soy-based beverage. Okay, so the advice from USDA focuses on discovering the individual's own healthy eating style, which says fill your plate with a variety of fruits and vegetables. Ensure that half the grains consumed are whole grains. Okay, if you're a big refined grain eater, absolutely switch to whole grains. That's already a healthier option. Then it says shift to low-fat and fat-free dairy products, which is unfortunate because if you are eating dairy, dairy fats can be beneficial. A good source of CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, which is very, very beneficial, or the transvicinic acid, which is the precursor to CLA. And it also states regularly shift proteins to include such choices as seafood, lean meats and poultry, egg, nuts, legumes, and seeds. Your meats don't have to be that lean, not if they're grass-fed. Vegetables should be consumed in a variety of colors and consistencies, such as dark green, red, orange, leafy, and starchy. Absolutely. Finally, they say, dairy is important for more reasons than just calcium. When you eat dairy, you get vitamin D, magnesium, and potassium. One of the reasons my plate increased dairy to 3 servings from 2 was to get more potassium in the diet. You're not getting remarkable amounts of potassium. This is where I disagree. You get way more potassium with your steak, baked potato, and broccoli dinner, which is roughly equivalent to about 2,000 milligrams of potassium. And there's no dairy in that dinner I just described. You get very poor vitamin D. And dairy is not the best source of calcium because dairy also contains phosphorus, and phosphorus and calcium compete for metabolism. And phosphorus also wins. Number 2, cook your meals at home. Absolutely. You don't want to eat processed foods. So many prepared foods are processed. You don't know how much sodium you're getting in there. Try to cook your meals at home. This is something I absolutely agree with. Number 3, for weight loss, choose realistic, balanced diets. Low-carb, high-protein diets result in greater weight loss over a given period compared with calorically equivalent diets that contain relatively more carbohydrates. Furthermore, high-protein diets are linked to better long-term benefits with regard to waist circumference, body fat composition, reduced loss of muscle mass, improved cardiometabolic risk factors, and decreased diameter of adipocytes. They are fat cells. Decreased diameter of fat cells. However, moderate carbohydrate, moderate protein diets have also been linked to improved body composition, lipid profiles, and postprandial insulin response. Okay. They focus on Mediterranean diet, which is fine. Okay. Number 4, they say choose fats wisely. So instead of giving up fats, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics says to spend your fat calories wisely. This means substituting with healthier fats to reduce intake of saturated and trans fats. When cooking, liquid oils can be used instead of solid fats like butter, shortening, or lard. Liquid oils can be polyunsaturated, for example, corn, sunflower, and soybean, or monounsaturated, olive, peanut, safflower, sesame, and canola oils. Oils also add key nutrients such as vitamin E. Another healthy substitution involves swapping out whole milk products with low-fat, fat-free cheese or yogurt. Okay, this is where we completely part company. They are still touting benefits of polyunsaturated vegetable oils, and that is patently wrong. Too bad. Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. This is wrong information. Absolutely stay away from man-made trans fats, that shortening they're talking about. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with butter, and there's nothing wrong with animal fat, including lard, including tallow. They do say, however, emerging research suggests benefits of some saturated fats, including those found in dairy and coconuts. However, they say, until their effects are better elucidated, it's recommended that people continue to limit saturated fats. Their benefits have been elucidated. Read all the research, please. And finally, number 5, which I agree with wholeheartedly, is eat plenty of fiber. Prebiotics are beneficial and an integral part of a healthy diet, and dietary fiber is the best known prebiotic. Fibers found in our vegetables, fruits, legumes, nuts, and whole grains. Fiber keeps digestion moving, binds cholesterol, pushes out carcinogens, helps us feel full longer, and feeds healthy bacteria in the gut. So, small changes when dealing with obstacles in trying to promote healthier eating. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.